Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Trials of Apollo, Tower of Nero, Chapter 1. Two-headed snake dude, jamming up my quiet ride. Also, makes shoes stink. When traveling through Washington, D.C., one expects to see a few.
Hi, I'm Ava.
I'm Neve.
And I'm Brayden.
And this is Return to Camp Half-Blood, the English class that you always wanted.
Where we analyze the Percy Jackson and Heroes of Olympus books through a new theme every week.
Ava, Neve, how are we doing this week?
Let me tell you how I'm doing. If you'd asked me yesterday, I would have said, I've never been worse. But things started to come up roses today. So let me set the scene for you all. We went to Spain. It was incredible. It was so stellar. It was so awesome. I came back the next day. I moved into a different apartment. I knew it was going to be hellish. It was. But we like got all our stuff in. This new place is beautiful. It's so much better than our original place. But that was a week ago when we were recording this, pretty much like 6 days ago. All I've done since is work and sleep and rehearse for my sketch show that's coming up, which is very exciting, but also very stressful because we thought we had a stage manager and then the stage manager said, sorry, can't. And so we had to scramble for a stage manager. I also was booked to close the restaurant that I work at on the night of my sketch show. And I'm not trying to get on my manager's bad side. So I had to scramble to find someone to cover my shift. I felt a little bad. I texted this brand new girl. I was like, hey girl, is there any chance like in the world we could switch? Like I totally owe you one forever. XO. Like, you know, and she was like, totally. I'm like, I meant the kindness. Right. But that's just not always how I operate in terms of like the hey girly vernacular, but it worked. And so we're switching shifts. But yesterday I was literally so stressed the entire day that I thought I was going to throw up. Because also I can't stand when like, I mean, this entire apartment right now is just bags everywhere because like I haven't been able to like have the time to do anything. One of my coworkers literally said to me today, they were like, when aren't you here? And I was like, ha ha. Haha. And they were like, no, I'm a little worried about you. And I was like, because I made the mistake in March when I started of asking my manager if I could have a few more hours. and now I've bit off far more than I can chew. And I told my coworker that and they were like, yeah, you should have tread carefully. I was like, well, I was green, so I didn't know anything. Long story short, things have started to fall into place today. We have a new SM for our show. I have someone to cover my shift. I'm doing a little better, but I'm still sleeping on an air mattress, right? And, with bags everywhere around me, and I haven't been able to cook for myself in days because we didn't have any equipment of our own. And so frankly, like I'm in my messy era, not in like a Scandi way, just in a way where I'm like, why is everything a mess around me? And I can't, my type A ass can't do that. Type A with ADHD is a really fun way to be. But yeah, that's how I am. I started listening to a new podcast though, and it's been so awesome. I started listening to, if any of you guys are our age listeners, you probably watched, or like our age and like also this like somewhat chronically online, you probably watched either Grace Helbig or Mamrie Hart on YouTube back in the day. I'm a Grace Helbig girl, first and foremost, always and forever. I love her so much. So I recently found out from a friend that she and Mamrie have a podcast called This Might Get Weird. When I tell you I'm obsessed with this shit, I started listening a few days ago, and like I've just been listening on my way to work and on my way home and like getting ready in the morning. It's so funny. They're just talking about random shit that happens to them. And like typically those podcasts, I'm like, all of you don't have to exist, right? But like theirs is incredible. So highly recommend. It's been getting me through this insane week. So that's been really my light in the darkness. How about you, Niamh? How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. Spain was so much fun. It was so amazing to see all those places and see my sister, who I miss so dearly. And she's coming back to the United States today, actually. Like, for them, right now, it's tomorrow.
Yeah, this, you know, this you know, episode goes up in, like, an hour.
Yeah, so it's today.
Oh, true, huh?
And that she was, like, she's been, like, posting on her private story, like, I literally can't believe this is happening. I have to go back to the United States. And after visiting, I do understand why she can't believe that she's going back to the United States. But yeah, I've been good since we got back, just went to work. And it was actually kind of nice. Like, you know, I was working still and it was like kind of exhausting, but like, it was nice to see, all my coworkers, and like, they're all very sweet and we've become very friendly. So it was nice that they like missed me. It was very sweet. And yeah, just getting back into the routine here. I was like literally inconsolably tired until I'm going to say like 2 days ago, and we have been back for a week. Like, it was like the jet lag is so much more terrible coming back than it is. Well, yeah, because
you never, because we never really adjusted going there, and then you come back and
going
you're like,
there, you're like, it's one thing to lose 6 hours in the middle of the night. So like, right. it feels weird because like the night isn't long enough, but also like it, you thought it was the night, you know?
Yeah.
You're like, this is just a really weirdly short night. That Tuesday, I kind of felt like my brain was melting. We flew back on Tuesday. We like a Tuesday afternoon at exactly 12 was when our flight took off, but our friends' flights left at 10 and 11 respectively. So we were there with them at the airport at like 6:37 in the morning, like up really early. And then just hung around the airport for like 6 hours waiting for our flight to leave. Yeah. And then we got on the flight and flew 7 hours. And then when we landed in Philadelphia, it was only 2 p.m. Just really being like, what day? Like, it can't still be Tuesday. And because it was only 2 p.m, Brayden had a lovely, productive day. He like went to the gym. He went and did things. I came home and I think within... I sat down on the couch and within 2 hours I was like asleep. Like for like, like until like 9 p.m., like the worst kind of nap where like you wake up and it's night and you're like, oh my God, it was. And it's been a while adjusting from that terrible nap, but it's okay. We're back.
Were you one of the ones of us who got sick also? Because I realized that it wasn't just allergies on that second to last day of the trip. I was getting ill from lack of like regulation. And then like I got back and it was also like because of the dry plane, I was like, ugh. Like I was so like, I was dead.
I was so sicky for the first couple days of, being home.
I was like fine, but like, I'm definitely still residually sick right now. Like I actually said to Brayden earlier tonight that like, I'm definitely like, there's a sinus infection in the works that I need to nip in the bud. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, I think I'm going to take a Mucinex tomorrow. Tomorrow's my day off.
Mine too. Woo!
I'm for a very long time, so I'm really going to savor it. I don't know why. I think my boss was being nice, like, you don't need to work on Wednesday. And I was like, thank God. So, yeah. But, yeah, been doing good. Made a necklace today. It was very fun. Yeah. How are you, Brayden?
I would say I'm in a similar boat as of Ava. We touched down back in the state. Spain was great, had a great time, vacation lovely. It's more of a footnote to the how I am now. is, and I have been pretty much working since, because I'm both catching up on a lot of remote work, and for a lot of different things. I'm in the throes of casting a show for my main full-time job. We're just starting rehearsals for the next show. And so I was at work early today to be at the table read for that. I also picked up extra shifts this week working or this month, doing like concessions shifts, because I just need extra money to pay for the trip that I just went on. And so I've kind of had the opposite of Neve's weird naps, in which I haven't slept almost at all since we've been back until like this morning. This morning I like actually like slept in, slept in, meaning I was like the first day I've slept past seven since we've been back, and I've still been going to bed around like my normal like midnight, sometimes a little later time, but I haven't like yesterday I got up at like 6:30, but today I slept past 10.
I know, I woke up at 10 today. I was like, woo!
And when I say past 10, I mean 10:03. But still technically past 10. I used to not be able to get up till after 10. So like this is a good thing overall. It just has been a weird adjustment, as I am more tired generally. But also I've really committed to, since being back, specifically going to the gym before work instead of after. And I've found that I've enjoyed that routine a little more. I like tried to switch it up again today to let myself sleep in. And I went to the gym after work today, and I was just kind of tired and didn't have the motivation to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's better to start the day, I found.
It is.
Like, yeah. It's exhausting to start the day.
I used to very much end my day. I would go at like 11 midnight.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it was my big routine over the past summer, but I was also like working a job the past summer in which I got out of work consistently at like 2 a.m. So I was like already on that kind of schedule. So on my nights off, or when I worked the day, I would kind of like going in the evening anyways, because I really had nothing going on last summer besides working at a shit movie theater. That was about it. That was about all I did last summer.
I went to
go to the gym.
I went to the gym after work a lot, like when I worked over the summer as well. Yeah. It was also on my way home from work.
That's
open. So then it was like better. Like, we're not gonna our gym is just like a like max like could be up to like 30 minutes depending on if you catch the public transit, right?
Yeah.
Which, like, you're not gonna go 30 minutes at like 9 p.m.
That's the thing, is like it's still we go to Planet Fitness, like it's still 24 hours. But I don't know. Exactly. I'm not gonna spend another hour on public transit in the evening after doing it during the day. So I have to do it either right before or right after work.
Yeah.
Especially when you are at work for so much of the day already, and like you're not getting much sleep to begin with. Like, I haven't been in a fucking minute because I'm like, I need to go to bed.
No. Yeah. That's real. I try to build my days around having time to go to the gym, because I actually really found on vacation how badly I need my gym schedule. I've just like a regulation of anxiety, and like,
no, it's so good for my mental health.
I mean, the nice thing when we were on vacation, we walked like over 200 miles in less than 10 days.
I thought it was over 66 miles.
No.
What?
It was way more than that.
It can't be 200. That'd be 20 miles a day.
It's really helpful for that. It's literally so bothersome when like things that like people have been saying really help your mental health, like actually do.
I know, like drinking water.
Drinking water and going to the gym is actually like really waking up earlier, actually better.
Oh,
like,
yeah, fuck that.
Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, I'm so mad.
I was so bitter for so long and now they were actually right.
Yeah, I know. I was like, damn, I really like regulates my everything to, to have a daily exercise routine. And I have a lot of nervous energy and I realized there's somewhere to put it.
Oops. Yeah. No, that's real.
Well, with that, welcome back to Return to Camp Half-Blood. This week we'll be discussing and beginning the Tower of Nero. Yay! Applause! Applause from the studio audience. We'll be starting naturally with chapters 1 through 4. And we'll be discussing them through the character trope of the turncoat. Because as we tried out last season, we're playing with adding tropes into this themes discussion because work. Because work. Also, we're running out of themes.
Yeah, there are only so many words, guys.
Even we just said the exact same thing, just a little time.
That's awesome.
Like, verbatim, the same words. That was so good.
I love it. We're fusing into one Celtic.
Speaking of Ava.
Oh, fuck.
We all know what time it is, and it's for Ava to do a 30-second recap of the four chapters this week. The four chapters that are the beginning of the Tower of Nero, and she's going to be going now.
Oh, great. And it's going to be bad because it always is. So we open and they're like throwing shade about DC and the politicians that are there. And that's my sass moment, but not to spoil. And then they're on this bus and they see this like two like headed like snake or whatever. And Apollo's like, no, no, no. And Meg is like, what's your deal? And then Miss Lou comes out of nowhere, who's like an icon Gaul we love. And she like kills this thing. And Apollo's like, fucking why? And she used to be close with Nero, but now she's double agent.
You're done.
Well, I got the important part in.
You definitely got the first two chapters.
No, I said she's a double agent.
Yes. But then they also escape the train. And then they go to Apollo and Sally's.
Yeah.
Oh my god, I forgot about that. Yeah,
and the snake tells a prophecy. That's not, but it is something that happened.
Guys, Estelle. Percy has a half sister.
This was pretty much the only thing I knew. This was the only thing I knew about. Not even this book series, because I knew Percy got a sister. I mean, obviously Sally was pregnant in that first book, so like,
yeah,
a child was gonna come.
No, that's like the only thing I knew about this too, and I didn't even really knew.
Aww.
I didn't even really know that it like stemmed from this series. I kind of thought it was maybe just something Rick tweeted one day. Like, I didn't know that it was like.
No, I didn't know it was like canon. Like,
yeah, I
like
didn't know it was
not about it at all.
I had no idea what book this girly came out of though. So it was nice to meet her.
It's so cute how they were like, when someone says Percy, she gets really excited.
I know, it was so sweet.
Like, I'll cry. Do you want me to right now?
What songs did we bring this week?
Bitch. With the introduction of the Celtic deities into this book, which was extremely exciting for, I'm sure, all three of us. I brought the Celtic song that's been trending on TikTok over the past few months, Tell Me Ma, the version sung by Shamrock. I literally listened to it on the way home from work today. I was like, it'll never get old. It's so fire. No song.
And Ava, I'm sure you experienced it. The way that they turn it to that song is like, they go crazy for that song. It's so funny.
They, as in the Irish people.
The Irish people.
You didn't clarify who the they was for the audience.
They as in any general citizen of Ireland. They're going fucking insane when that song.
It seems also the diaspora. Because it ignites something in me that no other song does. Like, there's no other song.
Literally.
I mean, that does bring me to my... This is a perfect transition, because if we're talking about songs the Irish diaspora goes hard to, this is not Come On, Eileen. I can see how we got here. However, this is a song that has been chosen before, probably by me, but could have been by any on the Mark of Athena playlist. But I did need a song. I wanted an action song for the fight with Meg, and it needed to be a little comedic, because the vision of, like, Meg and Lou in, like, such, like, intense combat, and Apollo's kind of a comically, like, holding back a door moment.
Yeah.
And that, but that's where our focus is. It was real fun, real comedic.
You're pulling a me right now, because I have absolutely no idea where you're going with this.
Shipping up to Boston.
Oh, that's awesome.
By the Dropkick Murphys.
That's hilarious. Yes. I thought you were going to pull out There's No One as Irish as Barack Obama.
Oh, another great choice.
Another great choice. I went a little more serious than that. Not much. But my other option was actually kind of even less serious, which was Oops by Young Grey.
Okay, I love that song. I know every single word to that song.
I have recently been bumping Oops by Young Grey.
That was me 2 summers ago. I know every single word.
Me too. I recently started doing a top 10 for myself of the week. It has been a contender recently. So
to interrupt, but Brayden, I need you to know this. Ever since you mentioned Venus by Lady Gaga.
Oh my God, like a month ago.
A month ago. It has been my number one. Like, every time I get in my car, I'm like, it's time.
Ugh, rocket number 9. Take off for the planet.
Venus. I love Now Serve Pluto. I love that song more than any. Oh my God. So I just needed to express that, because it's been, like, occupying a lot of my, like, mental mind palace.
Oh, I love that. That makes me so happy. I love that song. Love art pop.
Like, I've always loved art pop. Like, okay. I don't know why I'm having a revival with this song right now, but it's, like, everything.
Venus is probably my second favorite song off that album.
I think it's mine too. My second
guy, favorite. Guy. Is maybe my favorite. Oh, I can't say that. I don't know if that's true.
I was gonna say that's bold.
Definitely top 3 at least Lady Gaga songs. That the bridge to Guy. Pause this podcast right now. Go listen. You didn't even have to listen to the full song. Just listen to the bridge. I don't want to be on top because they know they're strong enough to know the truth. I didn't want to sing it, and then I, like, realized I couldn't come up with the lyrics without singing it, and then I kind of got lost in the mumble.
You know what? But I'm thinking about it. It might be my favorite on art pop. It really might. I'm not talking about Guy. I'm talking about Venus, because I was thinking it might be second to Applause, but I'm giving Applause points for the nostalgia factor and the Just Dance factor. But when I think about Venus,
I will say underrated star of Applause is Mary Jane Holland.
Yeah.
Pour one out.
Pour one
out. To be more accurate, light one up.
Light one up.
Mary Jane Holland.
Please. I also, dare I say it, I'm going to say it. I mean, this sounds explicit, but it's just the title of the song. Sex Dreams is so catchy.
I like that you said sex dreams, like, the phrase is explicit, just because we say so many worse words on this podcast.
I mean, we say shit, we say fuck, we say cunt. However, something about saying the word sex on this podcast is so weird.
We've definitely said the word sex before.
We probably have. It's just weird. I don't know. I'm like, I don't know
what I'm talking
about. We've yapped a lot on this podcast. We've had to have been included.
We talked very bluntly about that Mark of Athena scene. Oh my god, not the lift moment. I get stuck in it. The Mark of Athena scene in which Percy and Annabeth clearly have sex.
I mean, I think you're just asking a lot of questions.
You're right. Asking a lot of questions, given very little answers.
Right.
But I do, I was a, what, 10-year-old? Older than 10. When did Mark of Athena come out?
I don't know. I hadn't read it till we read it.
We were older. We were like 13.
Yeah, it was like 13 or 14. But I was like, I barely know what sex is. But I for sure know it just happened.
So my song, Catapulting Back, is really stupid. Like, it's really stupid. But I was like, I didn't have a better idea for the songs of what I could do for this week. And I knew I had to throw it in somewhere before we leave this book series. So it's here. My song is Espresso.
I love that goddamn song.
Because when I listened to it, I gotta say, like, third listen, I was like, this is like Apollo would love this song. Like, Apollo would be an absolute fucking menace.
Me about too.
And that's the only reason I'm picking it. I have to get it in somewhere, and because I can't think of a different one for this week, that is what's going to happen. And I think Meg would like it too, but like, she wouldn't admit it. But like, Apollo, you know,
or it goes the opposite way where Meg won't stop playing it, you know. We all know I love Espresso. I was on that Espresso train day fucking one. I said, Neve, there's this song. It's called Espresso, and I literally am addicted to it. And it has not left the heavy rotation. I will say,
that's
me Espresso. I was posting, captioning things, posting it on Instagram stories, like, weeks before everyone was like, this is the number one song. And I went, yeah, Sabrina Carpenter is the girl.
It's true.
She is that girl.
This was a Carpenter.
We haven't had a good song of the summer in a while, and she just dropped it right at the right time.
Yeah, it's been winter.
And, well, like, what was the song of last summer? Sick. Like, none. But now... We have a song.
What was the song of last summer? I just don't remember what last summer was, you know? You know what the song of last summer was? Or the album of last summer was Feed the Beast. For me, personally.
Yeah. I don't remember what the song of last summer was for me, but I don't know. Brayden, I do remember you being on that train. I will say, though, I think the song in the summer, like, I think they're like twins this year. And I think it's Espresso, and I think it's Cinderella by Remy Wolf. Because that song goes,
oh,
that one's great.
You're right. I'm loving Remy Wolf right now. The song of last summer was Padam.
Yes, it was. Yes,
Padam,
it was.
No, it was, there were two. It was Padam and was the first half of the summer, and then Rush.
Yeah. That was
the summer. That was like July.
Yeah.
There actually were some bangers last summer.
Yeah.
Red Wine Supernova.
Oh, bitch.
Last summer too. And then Feed the Beast. The Janelle Monáe album had a great place for me. Yeah. Lipstick Lover kind of had a moment. But the rest of the album didn't go very far. I love it.
I gotta go to my playlists. See what I was looking at. I will say, though, whenever I listen to Espresso now, it makes me think of Spain, because, like, literally every time we were getting ready for anywhere, or Brayden was even in the shower, like, it was just, we heard it multiple times per day.
Like, oh, yeah, no.
That's not
me Espresso. I was banging a fucking Espresso.
That's the soundtrack.
It was Espresso and Illusion.
Yeah. Oh, we did listen to Illusion a lot.
And also Bongos.
We did.
Bongos has had some staying power. I kind of left Bongos and came back to Bongos recently. But I will say, oh, and Good Luck, Babe.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
But the Espresso, Good Luck, Babe, Dynasty is kind of losing out with me personally at the moment to the whole Radical Optimism album.
Guys, he's in the top 10% of streamers.
Spotify, oh, give me the notification. I will say I'm in the top 10% of streamers of Radical Optimism.
It's great, though.
I can't stop. I can't, like, I know Training Season's been out for a while, but that's another one that I just can't stop streaming.
Oh, yeah. I was...
Dua Peep 8 with this one.
I was going heavy on those singles leading up to this album. And then I listened to the album for the first time, and I was like, I like it. I don't know if any of these got the crack that she put in those singles. That's not true. They got me. They have their hooks in me. Maria and These Walls in particular. I'm just having a brain fart. What you doing? What you doing to me, baby? That one is the most like the singles. That one, like, it was probably like third option for single.
I will say
they're all great.
Just to also contribute to the Song of Last Summer, I was checking my monthly playlists, and I gotta say it. Barbie came out last summer. It was Dance the Night. Like,
oh, you're so right. You're so right. It Dance the Night.
Dance the Night was the song of last summer.
Dua Lipa is having such a great year.
I love Dua Lipa. Like, I love her.
Me too. She's on her way to becoming, I think she's now certainly in my top five girls. You know? The girls as it stands are Carly, Rina, and Gaga, top three, kind of shifting around.
Always.
Depending on who released music more recently, basically. And then Kim Petras.
Yes.
And Dua Lipa. Like, those are my girls these days. I'm sorry to... Britney used to be one of my girls. She hasn't released anything in a while.
Dua Lipa's really tearing it up. She came from nothing. She came from Go Girl, Give Us Nothing to
giving
everything.
She did. She is so powerful. I don't know. I love her.
Underestimate the power of Dua Peep is what I've always said.
He's always said that. I do think currently my Holy Trinity is pretty impenetrable because we have Hozier and then Gaga. And then, like, you guys... Måneskin has been going incredibly hard for the past year. So they're my girls. There's one woman in it, but it's pretty impenetrable, I would say. But Dua Lipa, def top 10.
Oh yeah. I would say, I mean, I have also like bands, but they fall in a different category for me. I don't know why. Yeah. Because a solo artist, I'm like, here for their piece of culture.
Yeah.
You know, Troy Sivan, is in there too. I pour one out for him if we're not thinking gendered. If we want to give any men rights, we can give it to Troy Sivan. And Billy Joel.
Yeah.
Crazy duo.
We all know that. I love Billy Joel.
I know.
I love Billy Joel. I love David Bowie. I
love David Bowie.
But then, like, Fall Out Boy and Muna are like, in their own category for me.
Yes. Real.
So what were our favorite parts of these chapters?
I was just leaning to see how we're 38 minutes into the recording. Let's talk about the book. Love us. Strong start. It was so interesting right off the bat. I think we honestly needed... the time skip, even though it was just a week, I was like, so true. Yeah. Not need to.
I know. I was so worried I was gonna have to watch them like for the first half
road
of this
trip
book.
It again.
I was like, that's the whole thing. I know that's like the whole Percy Jackson thing.
Yeah,
but sometimes we're just in transit.
Yeah,
and the plot is not moving forward, but they are physically moving in space.
Exactly. Yeah. So I was very glad we made the time jump. I think it was very necessary. Philadelphia mention made me laugh.
And Baltimore mention, baby.
Yeah, we got a DC, Baltimore, and Philly, like,
yeah,
name drops.
Who's the new one for you? Huge.
Yeah. They're literally, they're like, as we pull out of 30th Street Station, and I was like, I can put myself in the situation of being on a train, an Amtrak train, pulling out of 30th Street Station, heading to Penn Station. It's like a
real specific experience
that I'm very aware of. Not a unique experience.
No.
Heavy traffic Amtrak route.
But like, we've been
also
there.
To DC. I've done the full thing from DC through Philly and Baltimore.
Woo.
I was right there. I was in it. Still, however, right, I can't really comprehend. And this is to no fault of Rick Riordan and to my own lack of knowledge of the mechanics of trains. I could not understand what was happening as Apollo was decoupling this train car.
Yeah.
Because one, I could not picture how the doors, like the door status, especially because the Amtrak doors are like kind of automatic, like not automatic, but they're weird. They're not like real doors. They're like,
it'd be hard to like hold one closed, metaphorically.
Yeah, they're almost like an airplane. If you've not been on an Amtrak train, I would say the closest comparison I have is like an airplane bathroom door situation with a window. And so I was confused about the capacity to like bar it because it's a sliding door, not a swinging door.
Yeah.
No, I agree.
But also, they're so barely doors. They're so strange.
They're basically like those little curtains that sometimes people use as like closet doors that are like wooden curtains.
An accordion door.
Thank you. I didn't know they had a name.
I like wooden curtains better. I think that there was difficulty in imagining that, but the thing that confused me.
Yes, and I will say that's a lack of my own knowledge of Amtrak and the lack of my personal imagination. No fault on Rick.
Well, I need to talk about something that is fault on Rick, and that's okay, because like, maybe
in for a penny, in for a pound. What else can we say about Rick?
Maybe like, it's just me. But like, I felt like I was actively reading the book, and then it got to the part where he was like, I'm gonna take some arrows to decouple this. Like, I was so present in like, there's no button that's given to just like decouple this train.
Ain't
passenger.
No way he decouples this with an
and
arrow.
He has an arrow, and I think I literally like blacked out. Like, I know I read the the paragraph, but I think I got so confused that my brain was like, "We're off." And then as soon as I got to the end of it, and they were like, the train pulled away, I was like, "It's on." Like, I don't know why. Like, I literally think I blacked out. It was so confusing. I'd have to go back and reread.
Because he also went, then Apollo. After the car decouples, Apollo makes the jump. I can believe he makes the jump. Classic action movie thing. Jump between train cars is one as they separate, whatever. Been there, done that, seen that before. And almost lands in their fight. So the other door was open. But the door stayed open. and then they were also right up against the door in the whole train car, they were right there, or did he just jump that far? And how did he jump that far as he was moving away and he moved closer? I was just,
We couldn't grasp this one.
The suspension of disbelief left me for a second, I want to reiterate, I loved all of these chapters so much.
I was about
this book already.
Let me back handspring off of that and say that because we're having these specific reality-based complaints, right? Because if we're going to complain about anything, these chapters were incredible. I texted Brayden and Eve like as I was like mid chapter 3 or chapter 4, and I was like, I fear this is already by far my favorite Trials of Apollo book. I was eating up every word. Like, I don't know what it was about it. everything these chapters was working for me. Not only do we get a both of my hometowns mention, we also get out the gate with like a political cartoonish burn of politicians. We also get jumping right into the action, absolutely no exposition. We also get Celtic historical deity. We also get stronger focus on history in general. We get like crazy, like battle rivalry type situation. Everything was working for me. So like these chapters,
Sally Jackson.
We get Sally Jackson. I can't stress enough how much I love this book already. I really hope it doesn't let me down.
Yeah, it was this collection of four chapters was so great, as it had great action, interesting plot development, and great internalism from Apollo. Like that scene with Paul.
Yes.
Was so incredible. Like we just, this just felt like some of Rick's best writing. Amtrak mechanics aside.
Exactly.
And again, we're not saying that he's wrong. We're saying we don't understand. We
can't comprehend. And that's
probably on us. But let me tell you this. The next time I'm on an Amtrak train, I'm going to be examining
those doors. I'll be thinking about it.
But opening the doors and trying to jump between them and
decouple the cars.
With my bow and arrows.
With your bow that you took on the Amtrak.
That I took on the Amtrak.
Yeah, it was a really good opening. What I really respect about it was a really great opening to the book without it feeling like it was only good because we've known these characters for the previous four books, if that makes sense.
Yes,
it was just like a really compelling story right from the get-go. And like, it's good that we've seen their whole journey. And like, it made the prophecy part make like a little bit more sense. But otherwise, it was just like a good start to a book that like, if you just picked this up, you'd be like, oh, word, what's going on?
It was also maybe the first time I've ever seen Rick abandon his formula of how he starts every book.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Which is by recapping the last book or several books. That always annoys me. It always like, it feels, it's such a slow way to start a book.
Yeah.
And it always felt weird to me because I was like, who's picking up this book for the first time? And it's like, I know that like the idea is like, if these books come out like a year or so, whatever apart, but like, I would rather you do a like Star Wars scrawl style blurb summary, a Glee recap in the beginning than like try to incorporate it into the story like that. Yeah. I don't know. It just makes those chapters, because it's always like, I remember the Blood of Olympus beginning so distinctly.
Yeah.
And like, it's such an interesting scene. There are two that I think of. The Blood of Olympus is like, it's such an interesting scene, but as they're walking up this mountain to do the whole I almost said Ulysses. Like, not untrue. And now I can't think of his actual name.
Where are you going with this?
What's his name?
Wait, what are you talking
about? The
odd. What did you say? Odysseus.
Yes. I don't know why I couldn't think of it.
I was so confused as to what you're talking about.
And then Oedipus. And I was just really blanking on the name. No, when they do the story with the suitors. And like in the beginning of Blood of Olympus.
Yeah.
But we slow down the whole intro of that by like also recapping House of Hades.
Yeah. And there were moments in these chapters where like, I feel like the vital details, like just in case you forgot, were like thrown in tastefully of like Apollo at one point is like recaps a little bit of like the fights that happened in the past book, but in a sentence. Where he's like, I'm just Eepy. And you're like, okay, like, this doesn't, like, slow us down. He's just Eepy. And, like, here's a quick recap of what happened. And, like, they mention Jason's...
Yeah, he mentioned any of the plot points that really affect this.
And everything that happened at Camp Jupiter, but only because we hear that Percy and Annabeth are in California and how they probably have been off the grid, so they don't know. And that's, like, just recapping it while also providing, like, a whole new element to, like, the story.
But also from those recaps, I would never know that the last one was about, like, a zombie.
Yeah.
That Caligula and Commodus died, never even mentioned. Those were technically the main plots. But we referenced the Jason's death. We just mentioned Hazel and Frank. And we're like, oh, with the silent god. Because that was like a overarching plot thing that changed. And I was like, thank God. Because even Rick knows that the last book was really meandering.
Yeah.
He's on a 5-book thing. He's like, I had to have a fourth book.
Had to keep it solid.
Abolish the fourth book.
Abolish? Well, that's not true.
It is for me. In a 5-book series?
You don't like Battle of the Labyrinth and House of Hades?
I like Battle of the Labyrinth.
You don't like House of Hades?
We like half of House of Hades, let's be honest.
I really like House of Hades.
I like half.
Cross the
board. I don't have like positive memories associated with it though. Like I like some of House of Hades, but like I just think on principle the fourth book syndrome, like as a whole, is just so real across like just the literary canon. And like I don't think Rick necessarily escapes from it. Like I think he falls victim to it to an extent. I think definitely more in House of Hades and the most in The Tyrant's Tomb. Battle of the Labyrinth 8 down, but like,
yeah.
But in general, it's just something that I feel like we don't talk about enough.
Yeah. No, and I would agree with that. Like when I start thinking about other series too, like the fourth book, I also have that problem with second books in a pentology a lot of the time. Like a lot of the time, the second books don't really.
I typically like second books a lot more.
I think the thing is, and I actually really felt like this with Trials of Apollo, did not love the second book. Did not love Dark Prophecy.
I did.
Loved Burning Maze. Burning Maze is easily my favorite up till now. And I really liked the first one. And I didn't really like the last one that we read, The Tyrant's Tomb.
Yeah.
And so it just really hit those marks of like, I didn't particularly like the second and fourth books. But it is interesting because I don't feel that about the last two Percy Jackson series, but I do feel that about like other series. Like I just finished A Chorus of Dragons and I really didn't like the fourth book. Like I liked it because I liked the series, and that's how I feel about all of these books. Is like I do like The Trials of Apollo overall.
Oh, love it.
But like if I were to pick books to reread,
yeah,
same thing with Heroes of Olympus. But if I'm going to revisit anything from Heroes of Olympus, it is certainly between Son of Neptune and Mark of Athena and House of Hades. I don't need to hear the beginning or the end because I don't think it starts off strong or ends strong.
I would choose Mark of Athena every single day.
Oh, yeah. No, hands down. If I want to feel like I'm living in the Percy Jackson world, Mark of Athena is the go-to, I think.
Yeah.
For the Heroes of Olympus books, yes.
I would say, for me overall, because I think because I get everyone. Like, if I'm like, I want to visit my friends, these characters, in the world of Percy Jackson, I don't get to see, like, Piper and Hazel and Leo.
I guess.
I read one of the original books. And so while I like them, they are their own thing in that, like, this is a world that I love that's lacking a lot of the characters that I love, just haven't been introduced yet. So probably why I felt a little lukewarm sometimes on the Lightning Thief.
Lukewarm? Haha, Lightning Thief, because Luke.
Haha. But on the original Percy Jackson show, because I was like, I do, while I don't love the plot and the writing of Heroes of Olympus, I do love the characters.
Yeah. And Heroes of Olympus is such a character study. And I think it is always weird to like watch the adaptation starting from the beginning and knowing like so much
is going to happen. Yeah.
Burdened with knowledge.
I will say, because I only became a Heroes of Olympus girly, like doing this podcast, like I'd read The Lost Hero. Like I'd read, I think, some of Son of Neptune. I don't even remember at this point, but like that was it. For me, my Percy Jackson world is that OG world with Percy, Annabeth Grover, Tyson, Luke, Clarice. Like it's the Half-Blood world for me. Mm-hmm. And I think, and like the other characters are like lovely add-ons, but that for me, I see them as extensions, as opposed to like people like Clarice and Chiron, who for me are like the OG world, but for you, it sounds like could easily be like extensions. So yeah. It's interesting.
Cause I feel like I read all of the original Percy Jackson books like together in succession. Yeah. Like by the time I was like we were still really young when they first came out, like in the way of I was still like probably like 7 or 8 when I read the books, but I needed to be I needed to be of a age where I was kind of picking my own stuff to read.
Yeah.
Percy Jackson for myself.
By the time I hopped on this, The Last Olympian, the only book I had to read on was The Last Olympian.
I'm going to say The Last Olympian may have even been out or been coming out as I was finishing them, because I did do Harry Potter first, you know?
I found Percy Jackson, I think, 2 years after you guys did.
Yeah, and so that's interesting. And so I had that experience reading the original series, and then the first book I waited for The Lost Hero. Mm. And so
I waited for Mark of Athena, or like not like waited for, but like it was in the fandom at that time.
Yeah. And I think that's why I think, because those books particularly started hitting for me once I was in like middle school, I think was really, really when the Heroes of Olympus books were popping off.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Blood of Olympus maybe came out when we were in high school.
Like the start of high school.
Like the start of high school. At the very least, freshman year was when Trials of Apollo was coming out. You know, mm-hmm. Trials of Apollo started coming out, was for sure started when we were in high school. I don't really remember when Heroes Olympus ended.
Easy.
But so I think it was in such a formative years of like also when I was first discovering fandom.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Like the Heroes of Olympus, I was on Tumblr in conjecture with Heroes Olympus coming out.
Yeah.
Like, seeing people responding to the books live as they came out. Like I was there on Tumblr when Percy and Annabeth fell into Tartarus. Like
I was too.
Yeah, that feels like I was in the room where it happened. You know,
no, literally like, we were.
So that's interesting. I do want to talk about the theme of this week, because I am really interested in Lou's character as a turncoat, but in a really cool way that I don't think we've really seen in Percy Jackson universe.
I know,
before.
Yeah.
We don't really get a lot of defectors from the bad side. Luke is a turncoat that leaves the good guys and then at the end makes the right decision, but that's not really the same as...
I don't think
these characters a lot generally.
Yeah, and I also find the way that this character is existing so interesting, because she is a double agent, but also, like, isn't, in the sense that she's just helping. Like, she's such an interesting character because she's really only motivated by keeping Meg safe.
Yeah.
And Apollo brings up the scathing read that, like, why should we trust this person? She's Meg's trainer, which, like, yes, Nero is a scary person, but, like, how complicit was she in, like, allowing Meg to be treated like this, like, her whole life? Which I thought was a good point. one single point to Apollo. And I think that it, at least like first impressions of her as a person. And then she does help them, but then it's like, I'm going to go back and act like you guys escaped. And I tried to like stay on Nero's side.
Yeah, but she's then, this turncoat that becomes kind of a mole.
But then it's unclear how much she's going to help in the future if this is just a like once. So I think it's an interesting like setup for the rest of the book is like how stable is Lou as a helping source going to be throughout this time there. The prophecy implies that she's going to be pretty stable.
I mean, I think that she's 1000% going to do whatever it takes to protect Meg.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really key point that is pointed out early in this book that is going to pay off in one of two ways. It could pay off in a like personal relationship way of like her turning to protect Apollo in like a really key moment.
Yeah.
Because I think that's a kind of a not a lesson Apollo needs to learn, because I think that's kind of similar to the Jason thing, but like I think that would be a key type of interaction for Apollo to have.
Yeah.
But
Apollo definitely knows he's starting at like rock bottom.
Yeah.
He knows that this woman does not care if he lives or dies at this current moment.
Yes.
Time, you know?
But there's also the kind of more interesting for dramatic tension option of she does something that helps them and protects Meg, but kind of gives up Apollo.
Yeah.
And that Yeah. I also have a lot of thoughts on this, because I think like our perception, like in our, not meaning like us, because we've almost like debunked this a little, but like the reader as a general terms, like perspective of Lou as a double agent, I think she's only quote unquote a double agent because her relationships are politicized. Like, she didn't ask, like bottom line, she did not ask to be involved in literally any of this. But just because she has the relationship she has with Meg and therefore has a different kind of relationship with Nero, like she was the only one in this situation who didn't set out with like a mission almost to like alter her relationship with the others. So she got sucked into this whole thing. And I don't even see her as like a double agent inherently, just because like, no, like her motivation doesn't align with that at all. Like that's never been her goal almost. And so I'm kind of like, when I think about like double agents, that's such an intentional position to put yourself in. And so rarely I feel like do people stumble into it, but I feel like she stumbled into it just because she got sucked in by both sides. So like, that's kind of like you guys were saying, what makes it interesting in terms of trying to predict how she's going to function the rest of this book, is because like Nero aside, like she is going to help Meg. She's going to protect Meg, but like she's not interested in alliances. Like she's just interested in Meg. So it's kind of like, it could go a million different ways, because we don't know who's going to be allied with who at what point. Like there's so much we don't know. And so it's like, that's what makes her so compelling, is because she's completely unpredictable, because like her motivation doesn't align with anything she's doing.
Yeah. I mean, she even like, even this whole rescue operation, almost she describes it as like a chance of like fate, that like she was the one who found them on the right train. And like, she was probably at more like actively seeking like than the other like search parties that were going around for Nero, but like literally any other search party could have found them, and then it would have been like lights out. And it, so like she wasn't, like you were saying, like it wasn't like a really intentional place she put herself in. She just like happened to be in the right place at the right time to protect someone that she loved, and then made that decision in the moment to help them out, which I think is a very interesting place to have someone who, in this prophecy that Snake Man tells Apollo, that like Nero's own will be the reason that you stay alive. Like if that's her, like this is a very unstable reason, you know, like there's no way of knowing that she's always going to be a reliable source of help, just like to like so that she doesn't lose her own life, or like, you know.
Yeah.
Right, right. And that's why I feel like
a limit for that, which is interesting.
Yeah. I mean, exactly. And that's why I think Turncoat suits her so much more than like Double Agent does, just because the idea of like like it's in the name, like agency is basically like choosing, you know, to like
you're actively choosing to live that double right. life ongoing, whereas exactly. Turncoat is like a moment switch.
Yeah, yeah, Turncoat's a moment, and also it could happen by chance. Like there are a lot of reasons why that could happen. Like mm-hmm. even just like the physical act of like turning versus the idea like verbally of agency. Like they imply completely different things in terms of motivation. And so it's like she could have happened to turn a certain way, and now this is her reality, but like never once has her agency been a part of it.
Yeah, I think it's, I'm really excited to explore this character because this is kind of one of my favorite character tropes. And I like what you're saying about...
You love Edmund.
Yes. Oh, yes. Completely. The relationship between the idea of like the turncoat and then the double agent, the mole, I think is a very rectangle square situation.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But it's like a double agent implies a planned ahead of time, but the idea of a turncoat that then chooses after that to be a double agent is also really interesting. Like I mean there are so many good examples and bad examples of this trope in other places. Like the quintessential poor example of this is Snape. Pretty on the beat, this kind of character of like has this relationship, is on the good side, turns to the bad side, is pretty heavily in the bad side, but because of then their prior like nice thing while they were in the bad side, you know, it's that's kind of exactly what's happening here. But like I can think of some other similar but not exactly similar examples that do this also so well that I hope I see the good qualities of those in the rest of the story, like Game of Thrones, the Tyrion Sansa relationship, how that grows, which is more in this like mentor in this bad place chooses to protect their student, or just even in the turncoat concept of like Star Wars Rebels does this really well. Star Wars, the sequel trilogy with General Huxley, does it pretty poorly. So there's a good and bad example right within Star Wars. I think it's a very Star Wars being such a like dark and light side really leads to a lot of like when any story where you have black and white sides are gonna have a character like this.
Yeah, of course.
Because it's like a natural product of the kind of the evil empire concept, which is such the basis for most YA kind of, middle grade fictions.
It's actually reminding me a lot now that we're like thinking about it. Speaking of evil empires, I'm reading a nonfiction book right now that is about the troubles in Northern Ireland. evil empires. But there's so like the middle of the book is like so solidly about what each side employed as strategies to gain double agents to spy on either, like, and that like their difference in methods and like what it could mean for the person involved, especially like on the Irish side, like the risks were like completely, and like they would kill you if you were a double agent for the British, like literally would just murder you. And I think that she's in the similar position of like, I don't think that when Lewis goes back with this plan of like, I tried to get them, but they got away. Like, I don't think that it's going to be a good moment for her, despite the fact that she has a pretty solid alibi for it. And I think that that's a really interesting, like the idea of her being a turncoat and making this emotional moment decision. And like now is going to have to pay really intense prices for it, you know, and like that, the weight of that decision and like how it's going to maybe influence how she helps them in the future, I think is interesting.
Yeah, agreed. I would like to borrow this book when
it's really good.
I just bought a book like yesterday.
It's
myself,
called Say
so
Nothing.
I have to read that first.
But. It's called Say Nothing. I don't remember the author's name, but it's like the most Irish name in the world. It's three words, and it's like William Sir. Like it's so Irish. I can't remember it, but it's a great book. I actually had like a 2-hour phone conversation with my dad about it because he grew up in the Republic of Ireland during that time, and I was like, gonna offer it to him, and I was like, actually I think that you kind of lived this, and he was like, yeah, I don't need to read that. I was like, but yeah, I don't think you need to reread exactly what happened that you were alive for, but it's great, everyone should read it.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Talking about Celtic stuff in this chapter too. I didn't even realize it applied to that theme as well.
I love, like, also just as a side note, like talking about kind of like Celtic behavior, the idea that she, like, Lou is so the classic, like, Celtic woman in terms of, like, it feels like she keeps so much distance. Like, she's so, I'll keep all my emotions right here and then one day I'll die.
Yeah. Oh, the quintessential Irish thing.
No.
Bottle everything up and then...
And then drink it away.
And then die. Should we... move on to sass moments.
Yes.
Let's do it. Because I will say, mine is quite literally the first sentence of the book. When traveling through Washington, D.C., one expects to see a few snakes in human clothing. Come on. That's incredible.
It was also great as like the literal opening to this book.
Opening line. That's another reason why I'm in love with it. Like, it's perfect.
Yeah. Mine was when they were captured and just like in a weird moment on the train of like what's happening. The station stop for Newark Airport came and went. God's help me, I was so desperate I considered making a break for it in Newark. So true. If you're thinking about getting off the train in Newark, you're in a really rough spot right now.
I just love that Rick's anti-New Jersey agenda was brought up.
No, and that, for that specific city, it's okay. If you're getting off the train in Newark, I'm so sorry for whatever's about to come your way.
Damn.
Mine was, I really liked Apollo's observations about Estelle.
Yeah, me too.
To me. Because it's kind of, he kind of views babies in the way I do, of like, they're more of a creature to be studied than a person.
Yeah. I agree with that.
He's like, a fascinating otherworldly creature, this baby. And I was like, so true. And I also really felt this. Everyone was seated around the table except Estelle, who Paul informed me was down for a nap. Down for the night, sorry. No doubt all the pure joy was a great amount of energy. I just like really felt that. I was like, you know what? I do have a hard time being enthusiastic and it's really exhausting. So like,
me and Brayden were on the phone the other day and I was going to one of the, like an event back at our college. And he was like, I hope you have a fun time at this concert. And I was like, damn, I hope I have a fun time too. And he was like, that's the most enthusiasm I can muster for you. Like, I was not being sarcastic. And I was like, oh.
Yeah, even my customer service voice is a little sarcastic sounding. Like, hi, how are you today? Like,
yeah, you do not have a lot of tone variety.
I feel like I start to come off a little condescending when I'm talking to old people on the phone at work.
Probably.
But like also they kind of need it.
Yeah.
Then you feel like you're talking to a baby sometimes when you're talking to a 80-year-old woman who has no idea what the internet is.
They probably didn't even clock it
quickly. Yeah. And you're like, hi, how are you? Good. Oh, I'm so glad you're good today. Okay. So it sounds like when you left a message, you just said beep, 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 123 screamed and hung up. What did you mean by that?
No, literally.
Yeah, they definitely don't clock that. They definitely think, oh, what a nice young boy.
Yes, exactly. No, I was about to say that. And like, I was like, I feel crazy. I don't know. Things just used to be different, I guess.
I can't do this.
Every period of time is different.
It's different.
Who are our offerings for this week? Mine's for Paul.
Oh, mine's for Sally.
Oh, then mine's for Lou. Perfect.
Lovely.
Snaps. Snaps for that.
Snaps.
Speaking of snaps, who are we voting off this week?
New
England.
Yeah.
Ooh. Then I'm voting off the 30th Street Station.
That's
I actually do kind of like 30th Station. No, but they've been under construction for months. And
the
I
recent
and I cannot
is like affronted.
Yes, and I cannot get a snack in there because
yeah.
their food court is closed.
Zero little
closed.
The food court?
That's like a pop-up Hudson News. Like that's all they've got. No, when I was there for the bus the other day, I was like, this used to be a society. Like we used to have like a Jersey Mike's, a Pret a Manger, like so much happening in here.
Oh
and now
God.
It's pop-up Hudson News.
Yes. And if for people who are not Philadelphiaites or have not been to the 30th Street Station, this is a really big it is smaller but with like almost the same niceness as Grand Central. Like
Yeah,
wow.
They were really trying for that.
The design,
they didn't achieve it.
No.
But their goal was something that nice.
The design is beautiful. Like it's real, it's old style, it's really pretty.
Small.
The like main hall has really nice like architecture and like art up in it. And off the main hall there used to be a very large food court with like a Dunkin', a Pret a Manger and like a Hudson News, of course, but like Jersey Mike's, Wendy's, like a whole bunch of food.
Two Dunkin'.
And they just like closed it off for construction and then put up a pop-up Hudson News in the main terminal. And that's
got it. Now that I have the context, that's crazy.
It is a little affronting.
Yeah. So,
because you're not there often, but when you are there, like you need a snack. Like you're going on a regional rail line that's a 4
When you are, I've always said that.
And I've always said that.
When you are there, You need a snack.
30th Street subway station that is just like literally just a stop on the subway. That's like a completely separate thing.
That's also been under construction.
They recently finished that one though.
I will see.
Not quite. There is still some tarps up in places.
If you are a subway station, there should be a subway there. Eat fresh.
You're so brave.
All right, well, that's all for this week, folks. Join us next week where we'll be discussing
chapters 5-8.
Make sure to follow us on social media. We're at Return to Camp on every platform that matters. And we also have a coffee account, a Redbubble store, and a website, www.returntocamp.com.
That was a long one, boys.
That was a long one. Maybe we're going to edit it, but maybe not.
I won't because it goes up now.
Well, no, there's that part in the beginning.